Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Be the Vessel podcast. My name is Daniel, and I play the roles of channeler and intuitive psychologist, aiming to bridge all aspects of the healing arts while navigating my return journey to the stars. I interview those journeying through all aspects of healing, whether that be from more traditional Western frames or from a more spiritual or spirit-based connection. What I always find is that everyone is a bridge between worlds, a universe unto themselves, and a unique light that shines brightly for the collective. If you like what you hear and are interested in more of my offerings, consider joining the Be the Vessel community at patreon.com/DrDanielAtkins, where you will find various unique offerings, bonus content, and podcasts such as my own channeled information and the new Be the Vessel healing series. May you find what you're looking for and remember the light within. Chitra Rochlani is an NSAM certified personal trainer, corrective exercise specialist, behavior change specialist, and precision nutrition coach. She recently published her first book, The Warrior Mindset, and believes that the mindset is the first place to begin on the journey to inner peace. Chitra is also a medium and intuitive healer with a calling to integrate all of her tools. As a wellness coach, medium, and intuitive, Chitra is on a mission to empower her clients to have a healthy body, a strong warrior mindset, and an aligned spirit. She is the founder of Fit Warrior Life and conducts one-on-one intuitive readings as well as interactive group workshops designed to break down complex topics like mindset, intuition, and meditation into simple and practical achievable steps. Chitra and I were introduced recently, and I was immediately captured by her story, her humility, and her courage to walk her unique truth. Please enjoy this episode with Chitra Rochlani, and may it be an invitation, a gift, and a medicine to unfold the gifts you were given and tell the story you were meant to tell. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. My book just got released, so...
I'm going to ask you about that.
Yeah, so it's been good. I'm just allowing it to flow rather than rush into the hustle culture and just seeing what comes and where it takes me. And it's taking me to beautiful places, and I'm just enjoying that wave. it's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll just get into it, because that's actually where I was guided to start with you.
Okay.
You know, there's obviously you have lots of different titles, lots of different expressions of yourself, lots of things that we'll get into, because I love the integration. But yeah, let's start with this newly released book, and your experience of, obviously there's the experience of writing and you know, and downloading and conveying all of this into words, but you know, you're at the point now where it's revealed, it's released, and that brings its own experience, its own feelings, as you're mentioning. So why don't you just tell me a little bit about this book? It's called The Warrior Mindset, 7 Mindset Shifts to Unleash Your Inner Warrior. So maybe one question to start with is what are the 7 shifts or the shifts that you feel that are most resonant?
Yeah. And it's interesting how it was 7, right? No other number, but 7. And again, also interesting that this morning I found out that the book actually has 111 pages, which I didn't plan for, and I did not time it that way, but it just happened. And,
Is 7 a meaningful number for you?
I think 7 is a meaningful number spiritually, right? In terms of the 7 chakras, the 7 colors of the rainbow, the 7 notes of the music. So 7 is definitely a significant number.
Yeah. And we're in a life path year 7 in numerology.
And I think my soul path number is 7 as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So this book needed to be written, and, you know, I'm not an author. I'm not a writer. My writing style, if you read the book, will come across as very conversational, because that's just how I talk. That's just how I relay things. And, a few years ago, I had another channeler, a friend of mine, say to me, "You should be writing books." And I was like, "What am I going to write about?" Whatever. And I brushed it off. And then I did a breathwork session, and I see myself in that meditation writing, signing books and speaking on stage. And I'm like, "Whoa, what the hell was that?" And, you know, I did a human design reading and someone else said the same thing. So it was coming at me from different sources. You know, I always joke about how, like, if you go to New York, you shouldn't ask one person for directions. You should ask at least four, because, and then the majority of the similar directions is what you follow. If like three people told you to go right, you go right. Because, you know, chances are you ask one person, they'll tell you go right. The other will tell you go left. So in a place like New York, you ask multiple people. So when I get the same message from multiple sources, I'm like, okay, there's something here that I need to explore. And so I kind of, after a year of being pushed into this or nudged towards this, I started to pay attention to it seriously. And I was like, okay, what am I going to write about? I don't know what to write about. And I'm like, is it going to be about my whole mediumship journey? Is it going to be a personal story? And, you know, I was like, I felt like it needed to be a foundational book. Because I was meeting a lot of people who were, you know, stuck in the mindset, but they didn't realize they were stuck in their mindset. So they kept trying to cover up that issue of the mindset with other modalities, other, you know, spiritual practices, other ways to heal. But it wasn't quite getting to the root of the problem, which I thought was the mindset. And it's always been important to me. Mindset has popped up over and over in my life. I, at one point, became a personal growth junkie where I was like reading up everything and watching everything that I could about mindset. So I knew it had to be about mindset. That was the one thing that I knew about the book.
It's interesting because just to hear you say like, yeah, I was deciding what to write about, my mediumship journey, which we're definitely going to get into, or other parts. And you know, I know probably for those who listen to this podcast and those who are just interested in the more kind of fantastical aspects of spirituality, right? Like spirit guides and aliens and mediumship and all this stuff, we can lose touch with some of the foundations, which is like, you can have all these psychic gifts and you can be floating in multiple dimensions, but there are these foundations of like, how do you speak to yourself, you know, and how does the conscious mind, not just all these other aspects, how does that dictate your daily reality? And I resonate with that a lot because that was a very painful and foundational part of my own as well.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that, like you said, there's so much out there, right? There are so many different modalities or so many different ways to experience spirituality, but we are living in a conscious mind. We are living in a conscious world where we have to use our conscious mind every day. And so if that foundation to me is like shaky, then I feel like you're going to be lost even if you have these gifts. You know, like I know for a fact that if I hadn't done the mindset work on myself, And I'm not saying I'm evolved, you know, mentally or whatever, but I've done some of the work to understand how I can rise above some of these basic emotions of every day that pull me down, that hold me down, that don't let me rise up. And I think everything is energy. I think that energy is everything. And so in order to attract the people, the experiences, the gifts that we deserve, I think that we need to attract from a place of high energy, right? And we, if you look at your life, anybody who's listening, or I'm sure you can resonate with this too, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but if you look around your life, whatever your energy is, you're attracting more of that. It's not what your words are. It's not what your actions are. It's not any of that, but the energy that you're putting yourself out there with is what's bringing you back a return. So if your energy is complicated and if your energy is like worry filled or stress filled, you're attracting more of that.
So I'll say, I don't think you're wrong. I think that energy is a foundational way to understand the existence of this universe, all that is. One thing I personally like to add to this kind of law of attraction is because sometimes I feel when we hear that, when we hear if your energy isn't high, you know, look at sort of what you're attracting and that, because I'm just personally very sensitive to self-blame. And so sometimes what we do is we hear that and we go, oh, my circumstances suck. I must suck. And then we add on to it with more self-punishment. So I usually just add on this scaffolding of, you know, if there are challenges in the circumstances, reflecting challenges in the energetic frequency, that's okay. Let it be so, because not through forcefully punishing ourselves to get us out of that place is really ever going to work, but through the forgiveness and the allowance of, there must be a reason that I'm having this mirrored back to me. There must be a reason that these circumstances are reflecting challenges in the inner energetic being, so that I can love it. I can love it better. I can let it be so and allow it to change. I usually add language like that because for me personally, it allows more forgiveness for when I still very much have to navigate the shadows and the lower energies.
Yeah. And I agree with what you're saying. And thank you for adding that, because I think that's true. And I think my personal experience with mindset has been so filled with giving myself more love that I don't even see it as, you know, like, okay, I need to, because
like for you, when you recognized that it wasn't from a place of punishment, it was like from a place of like opportunity and possibility.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think at the bottom of all of this is the fact that we are all unique beings and we all have these amazing strengths, and we have been conditioned to appear a certain way in society, to live our life a certain way. And I call it the conveyor belt of success. It's like we were, you know, when we were about to enter school, we were put on this conveyor belt of success. And it was like, all right, go run as fast as you can and try to beat everyone who's around you. Right? That's the conditioning that we have. And we still to this day continue to do it to our kids, you know, and I have a son who's a junior in high school right now. And I'm constantly trying to balance the, you know, get your SATs done, get your, you know, college prep done, you know, make sure like we have to get you in all the best of the best colleges. And at the same time, honor your individuality, honor your strengths, honor your own personality, right? And don't get caught up in that rat race. So it's so conflicting, right? But because we get pulled into this direction of do better, do more, it's even more important to focus on what's going on inside. And it's even more important to be authentic inside and out. And in order to be authentic and love who you are authentically and not try to be someone else, I think that the mindset is the biggest piece.
Well, and yeah, and that's the interesting thing, right? Because when we talk about reflecting back our circumstances and the inner energetic body, like a lot of us, like you say, are conditioned to play out certain games for certain kinds of circumstances that appear good, appear successful. And many people do that well, and they've achieved a lot of what should be worthy in their circumstances and receives accolades and validations. And yet the inner energy, the energetic body, that I may refer to it as sort of the beliefs, the frame of thinking and the emotions, right? They're not all great. They're not all high vibration. They're not all love and bliss. They're still playing out games of I need more. I need to beat everyone around me. There's scarcity and competition. So it seems like to reflect back circumstances that work for you is a really unique and individualized journey, that some circumstances that reflect back a really high vibration life for one person are not going to be the same. I mean, there are obviously foundational elements that we all enjoy, like healthy relationships and different kinds of things and passion and things like that. But the way it looks is so different that to judge or compare, oh, my life must not be high vibrational because the circumstances don't look like someone else, is never going to work. It's only going to be judged by the inside out, right? By how you feel about it. And I am not going to go into a tangent about my life path because I do that enough on here. but there were circumstances that I had to pivot from because of my own energy.
Yeah. And I'm sure it was a difficult path to choose for you, but you did it. And I'm sure you feel better, right? Now that you have, you know, chosen the non-conventional, non-traditional way of doing things. How does it feel?
Yes. Yes. Now it's brought its own opportunities to move through extensive amounts of fear and really all the things that were keeping me held to that path. But as a result, there has been enormous freedom. Freedom is one of my highest values, and I was not free, and I am very free now. And so it's expensive and adventurous and fun and scary as hell sometimes still, but I wouldn't trade it. Wouldn't trade it.
But you know what? Your face just lit up as you're talking about. Face lit up. So I'm telling you, this is what we need. We need our bodies and our faces and our emotions and everything to be lit up all the time, not dimmed down. And so that's for me where the seven mindsets came in, right? You were asking, what are the seven mindsets? And it was an interesting story. And I don't know if I shared this with you when we spoke last time, but I was doing a photo shoot for a nonprofit organization, and it was about women's empowerment. The organization served women who dealt with domestic violence. And so they wanted me to do something empowering. So I made these cards, and each of the cards had three words on it. So it was blessed, not stressed, believer, not doubter, fearful, fearless, not fearful, victor, not victim, abundance, not scarcity. And so there were seven of these that I came up with, and I literally downloaded them in a meditation. And when I was coming up with the structure of the book and the chapters of the book, about 11 years later, after that photo shoot, I happened to find these cards, these decorative cards in my drawer as I was looking for something else. And I was like, it just hit me in that moment. Like, these are the chapters. These are the seven mindsets. And that's where it came together. And once I had that idea, I literally downloaded the book within like a weekend. Like the 70% of the book just came to me in a weekend.
Wow. Wow. I'm always amazed at that, because I've been told that I'm meant to write some books, and I do a lot of writing, and there is a lot being downloaded, but I would not say an entire book has come over the weekend. So, I mean, I'm just curious, like, what was that process like? Were you, as it was being downloaded, were you writing furiously all that weekend, or it just became sort of known and visible for you to pull from over time? How did that look?
So I would say my biggest battle with writing the book has been my own courage to show up. So the only thing that has stopped me from getting the book done in a weekend or a month or two or three was my own fear of who the hell am I to show up and write a book. And so when I got this idea, when it all came together in my head that this is how it's going to be. And I think that the downloads are one part of it, but there's also your individuality, right? Your individual strength. So my brain is a little bit ADD, right? So I need to break things down and simplify them really, 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 really easy, right? So that I can understand it. So when I teach something, I teach it the same way. I break it down, I simplify it. And I also think that I want everyone to be able to find themselves in the journey that I go have them go through with me in the book. So let's say you're not really playing victim in your life, but you're dealing with the fearful mindset a lot. Fear is a big thing for you. So maybe you just look at the fearless, not fearful chapter, and you find your solutions in there, and you find some ideas in there to help you break through that fear, right? And then when you get to the victor, not victim chapter, it's like, oh yeah, this is exactly what I do. And this is why I am not playing the victim anymore. Maybe I used to at one point, but you can relate to it. So when I started to get that idea come together, I figured these are my seven chapters. I didn't have a beginning. I didn't have a conclusion. So I literally just sat down and tried to come up with a chapter around, let's say, abundance, not scarcity. Right. And I started to write, and it started to come through, and it wasn't perfect. It wasn't great. It was average at best, but I dumped it all onto a Google Drive. And then as it started to come together, I started to freak out because I'm like, oh my God, this is looking good. You know, it's starting to get real. Like, I can actually turn this into a book. And then I showed it to my husband, who, you know, is like very well read and everything. And he can critique things for me all the time. So every time I'm doing some complicated stuff, I'll show it to him. I'm like, what do you think? And he was like, it's great. And I was like, what? No, you're not supposed to say that. You're supposed to tell me, fix that, fix that, fix that. He's like, no, it's good. I think you're onto something. And so it freaked me out. And I turned off my computer and I didn't look at it for 6 months.
Wow. 6 months.
Yeah.
What brought you back?
Yeah. So again, you know, just in talking to my other spiritual friends who were connected as well, pushing me again and again, reminding me again and again. And then there was actually this one meditation that I was doing. And I think I had, for some reason, I don't remember what it was, but it was like a 45-minute meditation that I did. And as I was going through it, at the end of it, I felt like I downloaded this message, which was, you have a gift and you have something that you can share with people. You have all these hungry people sitting outside your window and you have the feast of food inside. When are you going to open the door and give it to them? And I remember feeling like, as I came out of that meditation, I was in tears and I was like, do I really have something to give? I mean, you know, you start questioning yourself because I don't have like fancy degrees. I don't have fancy, like, you know, education to, so by the definition of success that society shows us, I think I'm a nobody, right? But I've had 20 plus years of spiritual growth. I've had 20 plus years of working on the mindset, reading personal growth books. I have this unique way of dealing with my problems where I like to break them down. I like to ask 20 different people for ideas. And then I see how out of 20 people that I ask, 15 have the same solution. And so there's something that they're onto, you know, so taking that, breaking it down, simplifying it, that's my skill. And that's unique to me. And so if I can combine that with my guidance, maybe I do have a gift that I need to give to the world. You know, and again, without attaching my ego to it, like it's my gift and I'm amazing or any of that. Okay, if it's going to help somebody, and if I do have a feast of food sitting with me that I can serve to the world who's hungry outside my window, who am I to stop that from happening?
And if it's going to raise your own vibration and just and allow you to be lit up, then yeah, go for it. And yes, I love that I don't even know what you would call it, like a collector, a synthesizer, an integrator. And that is for sure a gift. Cause I will say personally, that is absolutely not me. I am very much I'm not a silo, but like a lot of my own creative inspiration I kind of have to block things out and go in me and see, because I'm quite sensitive to other things going on. So yeah, it's different. And I love that it's different because we have different ways and things to offer. And I will say that the breaking things down is super, not only for the receiver of someone's work, like being able to absorb it and pick the chapter that resonates most, but anyone out there who wants to write, like myself, you know, I was writing previously poetry and whatever for grad school and stuff, but that was, that was a different situation. But when I really was breaking free and having the very same fears that you were having, blogging was really helpful for me because the structure and limitation of a blog is like, well, this is just going to be one little thing. And like, it doesn't have to mean anything. It's just one little thing, paragraph, couple paragraphs. But then after a while, you know, with enough blogs, you got a lot of stuff going on. Organization isn't like my greatest strength. So, but like I have a huge Word document with a lot of weird stuff on there, but yeah, broken down into different things. And if I want to write, I'm just like, okay, what area do I want? I don't think about anything else in that whole big thing. I just go right to that pocket and I write there. So, yeah, so I absolutely resonate with that.
Yeah.
So I want to go back to the seven shifts for a second. So these were downloaded to you and they got locked away until you were guided back to them. That's definitely a theme, locking things away until you're guided back to it. I like that. It's like a little hibernation until you're ready to rediscover it. For you, you had been collecting, you know, ideas about how other people were changing their mindsets. For you, what had you utilized these shifts? What worked for you?
It's all coming from my personal journey, right? I've always been, fear has been my biggest mindset block, always to this day. Like I get from messages from my guide saying I should be on my third or fourth book by now, but the fear is what holds me back. So
that's a little aggressive from the guides. But okay.
I know. Well, you know, they want stuff done. And I think all of our guides want us to do more, right? I don't know if you would agree with that, but they, you know, because from what I understand from the spirit world, they are limited in what they can do. They don't have a physical body, right? So they can only communicate through thoughts. They can only try to send us thoughts. If we take action on it, their thoughts become more meaningful and more fruitful. And that's my understanding of it. So I've always gotten this message that you guys have more hand, you have more power, you have more ability to do good in the world. And so do it. Like, let's go already. You know, I've always felt this rush. And I've always resisted it out of my own fear. Right. And so not only did I use these tips that I give in the book for myself, but I continue to use them to this day. You know, like every time I have a fear, I'm like, what would the warrior do? You know, and so I have to remind myself constantly. So by no means am I an expert, or by no means have I conquered the mindset. I just think that I've done enough work to maybe help somebody else along the way.
Of course, 100%. And so just to go back to what you were saying, I agree 100%, and I'll add my own flavor to it, which is that 100%, from my experience, the guides, the guidance system is, for me, it comes in the form of creativity. Like, you're a creator, you're here to create, and I do hear a lot of that stuff. I frame it slightly differently for myself because, again, I'm very sensitive to self-punishment, and my mind in the past has been very quick to punish myself. So if I feel like I'm being pressured to do more, I will feel like I'm not doing enough. And that will lead me into a difficult relationship to myself, or a relationship to these guides. Like, who are they? Are these rulers that I'm trying to please? And then it plays out the same dynamics that I was playing out in systems and with family, and I was trying to be good enough. So part of my power is like, I'm doing just enough, okay? I'm doing plenty. And yes, there is always more. And you guys don't get to be creators, so I get it. There's always, for you, there's always more to manifest. But like, you know, for me, so much of the journey has been slowing down because I was pushing myself pretty hard. And in slowing down was the invitation to learn that, like, I'm doing enough, I'm enough. And from that sense of flow, I end up creating a lot. Because I have a lot of power. It was just that when I was pushing is when my body was literally like shutting down.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. And you know, I honor what you're saying, because it is hard when you're conditioned to go to that resistance, right? And I can relate to a lot of that, because, you know, the other problem that I have always had all my life is, you know, just struggling from low self-worth, right? And that ties into the fear, and that's the root cause of the fear. So when I did the work to get over that, right, and I was able to see my own power, I felt like there was a little bit of a shift where I was like, you know what? I do see my power every now and then, not all the time, every now and then. And when I see it, my first instinct is not to go hide. It is to show up and help in any way that I can. And my resistance seems to disappear when I see my power, as opposed to when I see what other people want me to be doing or saying or whatever. But when I see it in, and it's rare, it doesn't happen all the time, right? But when I do see it, the first thing that I want to do is, okay, let me help anyone that I can help, right? And then it becomes easier to show up, and it becomes easier to do the things that they want me to do.
Yeah. And that's really, I think, at the crux of the mindset game, right? Is that there's two sides to every coin. So like hearing it the way that an old version of myself would hear it is like, you have to do more. But the way I can hear it now is, you get to do more. And that's amazing. And because you're worthy of doing more, now it excites me and I light up. Where in the past, it would be like, what, more homework, more to prove myself, more to be worthy? No, no, no. You're already those things. You just have the opportunity. And that shift for me has allowed, you know, the heart space to open that it's not, you know, doing things in life is not all homework, which is kind of it kind of used to feel like that to me. Even the things that I that were aligned for me being in the healing arts, and particularly when you are in those systems of graduate school and things, so it's very explicitly being reflected back to you, lots of work. It's hard to shift the mindset outside of that to see the privilege, the gratitude, the worthiness, the opportunity, the capacity, the possibility, the creation of it. And I, for me, stripping all of that away and just starting from the most bare nothingness I could conjure to build up allowed me to see, because when all of it was stripped away, I was missing seeing as many clients as I was. I was missing, I knew I wasn't going to go back to that, but I was going to have the motivation to create something of my own so I could live a daily life that I enjoyed showing up for.
And I think that's part of the journey, right? I was thinking about how what you were saying, it's not that we need the world to see who we are or how great we are or how authentic we are. It's just we have to see our power, right? And that's what I'm hoping that this book will do for people, is to show them that they have everything they need within themselves, right? But that only happens when you peel those layers, you feel the feelings that come up, and then you heal whatever is coming up, right? So I'm always talking about the peel, feel, heal. That's like the three things we need to do.
I like that.
You know, because yeah. we're so used to covering up what we feel. We're so used to hiding it, pushing it down, not being authentic, you know, and we put on this mask and we go out into the world every day pretending everything's okay. And then we have the job, the car, the house, the family, the pet, everything, but we're miserable. And to me, that is the most disservice we're doing to ourselves in this lifetime. You know, because we all deserve to be happy. We all deserve to feel joy on an everyday basis. But it's not easy. There's no quick fix. Like, if anything, I'm the quick fix queen, because I'm like, don't come to me for quick fixes. I got none of those. But if you're ready to take a deep dive and really get real with yourself and face the stuff that comes up, yes, you can get help. You don't have to do it alone. There are tons of professionals out there to help you. There's therapy, there's coaching, there's hypnosis, there's, you know, spiritual guidance. There's so many different ways to get help. And that's what I did. I went on this journey to figure out, am I really as bad as I think I am in my head? Am I really like not as good as I think I'm not? Like, I had to question all of that. And then I had to go seek help. And then I had to get that validation from the outside, from people who held the space for me to explore that. And that's when I realized, oh, no, I'm actually pretty awesome. You know, it took a while.
It can. And because there are so many options out there, so, you know, the vast array of healing arts, which is great. But because of that, it becomes so individualized and personal to each of us. So, like, what were some of the things that you explored in those areas that worked for you?
Yeah. So, you know, I had my guides guiding me. So that was the one direct connection that I had, and that had proven.
Yeah. And we're going to get into that for sure.
So that had proven to be something that, you know, it wasn't something I went looking for. It just happened in my life. And then it started to, you know, I started to have experiences that I couldn't deny the existence of these guides. And so I started to finally give into it and get curious and learn more. So I had that direct connection that was guiding me. I had friends and other spiritually connected people that I was attracting in my life. And, you know, it's funny how, like, when I was saying we attract the energy that we're in, when I was in that low vibe energy of like, I'm not good enough, I'll never get approval from the people around me, I can never do enough good, I was attracting more of those experiences. But as I started to make the shift within and work on my mindset, why do I have so much fear? Why do I, you know, get stressed so easily when someone says something, you know, remotely negative? Because I'm a sensitive person. Why am I a sensitive person? So I went down that rabbit hole of like really questioning why I am the way I am. And I think that's, I don't know if everyone does that, but that's just how I deal with all my problems is like, you know, okay, why is my kid acting up? Or why is my two-year-old throwing a tantrum? I will Google it. I will go to people who know. I'll go to parenting coaches. And I start to realize that there's, you know, there is more in me that needs to be healed, right? So then I had therapist friends who were coaching me. I had a business coach that actually shifted my mindset around money. And as I made the money mindset shift, I started to see more of my worth. You know, I'll give you an example. I would do nutrition plans for people. And I had a client who went from pre-diabetic to the normal zone. And my business coach was like, well, what would you value that at? And I was charging like very bare, basic nominal fees for that. And she was trying to get me to raise my prices. And I was like, well, I don't know. I mean, you know, she's like, what do you think that means for her to go from pre-diabetic to normal? I'm like, well, it's huge. And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, and she's like, and she's a doctor. And she knows medicine. And she wasn't able to do it. But you were able to help her do that. And so, you know, validations like that, that were coming in, gave me a little bit of a confidence boost. And so that was one. And then I had another friend who does hypnosis, and she, you know, had me under hypnosis, and I revealed some of the stuff that was going on underneath in my subconscious. And it was like, whoa, okay, I see how that adds up. You know, so there were little pieces of the puzzle coming together from different modalities. Breath work was something else that I had tried.
That's usually the thing, right? Is when we begin to ask why, the only reasonable answer we come to ultimately, if we're really willing to look, is like, oh, there's more for me to heal. That's like really the peel, feel, heal. That's, for me personally, that's all. That's the only way I've only been guided or able. You know, some people really are seemingly able to really actively manipulate their external circumstances to an extent, you know, to the amount that they're karmic life path will allow them until they may be guided in to grow. But at some point, if we're ready for it, we're probably going to be guided back in to see what is manifesting all of this, what is creating all of this reality, not out of which I sense you never really had, even though there were esteem issues, your mind didn't necessarily go to beating yourself up when you started asking the why, but it went to or maybe it did. You can say, but it went to there's opportunities to heal here. Like for me, I would ask the why question a lot earlier in my life, but it would kind of reach a dead end if there was shame. You know, if there was just it wouldn't allow me to create opportunities to get myself out of it. It would just be like why, because I'm not good enough or whatever, and I'll just leave it there, or I'll explore a little bit, but only to a limited extent. And when the why became less about because I'm unworthy, but more so, no, I'm just a human being and there are things to heal because we all have that, it allowed more space and freedom to actually do the work.
Yeah, because, you know, and I agree with what you're saying. For me, it was a little bit of a mix, I would say. But I think when I started my why journey of asking those questions, it was more out of frustration. And I think most change comes from frustration, right? When they say when the pain of being the same is greater than the pain of change, that's when you change. So I was tired of being this person that, you know, was a people pleaser, but then there were certain people that I could not please. And I was going out of my way. I was bending over backwards and I was doing things that they wanted me to do, but I could not meet the approval that I was looking for. And it came to a point where it was like, why can't I get this approval? Like, I'm a good person. I don't go out and try to be mean, or I don't try to be nasty, or I don't try to manipulate people. I am like, you know, whatever you see is whatever you get with me. So I kept, you know, it got to a point where I was like, I don't understand this. There's got to be more. This does not add up in my head, because I'm not trying to go out and hurt people. I'm not trying to go out and, you know, say that I'm better than you or whatever. I am trying desperately to seek approval, you know, and there were certain people in my life that I was desperately trying to seek approval of. And it got to a point where, you know, it took outside people outside of that little realm of mine to point out my strengths and say, well, if I had, you know, like I had a friend who said, if I was half as good as mom as you, I would be so happy with myself. And I was beating myself up because I kept thinking, I'm not doing enough. I'm not doing enough, because what was being reflected to me was like, oh, you're not doing this. You're not doing that. You're not doing that. And my weaknesses were being highlighted as like, oh my God, this is horrible. And so I'm like, there's a disconnect here. If the world outside sees me as someone who is great at helping people, who is great at showing up, who's easy to work with, why am I getting a different message?
What I love about that is, because some people will say you only grow when you hit like rock bottom or a healing crisis or something. And, you know, that does manifest in different ways. And for me, it was physical pain, but you can reach like a dead end in your circumstances, but also be willing to own your power by saying, wait a second, this doesn't add up. Because the other option is saying, no, I must just deserve this if it's happening. But at some point, we're willing to not say that and say, no, there may actually be something I deserve more. And how can I start to shift out of the state of perennial people pleasing and trying to be good enough, which is, you know, really what happened in my own case as well. So it's like that place of reaching a dead end in the circumstances, but no longer just believing you deserve that or blaming yourself for it, and being willing to explore elsewhere as a result.
Yeah, it's all about that exploration, you know, and that's what I invite people to do, you know, when they're working on their mindset. Just explore what's going on. Just observe your mind. Where are your thoughts every day, like on a daily basis? What kind of thoughts are you having? Are you living in worry? Are you living in fear? Are you living in insecurity? Are you living in doubt? You know, are you just so scarcity minded that you can't even imagine what abundance looks like? Right. I mean, I remember a little example, right? When my kids were little, I would take them to the library for story time. And, you know, those performers or people would come in to entertain the kids. They would have these little free toys. And I would see the parents pushing their kids to go rush and grab one, go get it before it runs out. And I've always told my kids, abundance, there's plenty in the world of everything, right? If I made a snack and there was a little bit on the table, I'm like, there's more. If you need more, we will go to the store, buy more, come back and make it again. There is no need to attack things as if there's like no more left in the world, right? And so my kids have grown up with that mindset. And I learned it from my mother. And so it's been serving me so well that, you know, I go to like, you know, places and I'm like, okay, I'll go last. Like I remember I went for a book signing and I think I mentioned this in the book. I can't remember now, but I went for a book signing and we were the last three people in the line and they were like, oh, we ran out of books. And the author had to leave. And they said, we have two more copies left in the store. And then I was the last one. I was like, that's okay. No worries. You know, whatever it is, it is what it is, right? I'm not going to sit and be like, oh, I didn't get the last signed copy or whatever. And she goes into the store and she goes, I actually have a hardcover. And she was giving out paperbacks before. I have a hardcover signed by the author. And I found one. It was, and it came out and it was mine, right? So when you have that abundance mentality and that mindset, you attract like amazing things. You just have to remind yourself to be there and live in that abundance.
You know, it's a tale as old as time, and it's not so reductive as to this, but it tends to be the case that the people that have the most in this world end up having the most scarcity-based mindset because they felt the need to collect so much. So they became billionaires, but then you ask them if they have enough, and there's still something they're trying to get more of. And it's obviously not completely that way. But it is interesting because at some point you could potentially learn that, oh, abundance isn't just about having the most of material things. It's about feeling that all is provided for, trusting that all is provided for inside, an abundance of the feeling, which is ultimately what we want. We want, of course, survival base needs to be met. But then outside of that, we just want things so we can feel a certain way. That's really all we're after, is an abundance of feeling. And that can be accessed through a variety, infinite possibilities, rather than needing to chase after the last free toy. So this is obviously foundational, and we could spend the whole time talking about this because it is. We're all, whether you are open to different sort of spiritual principles or not, we're all coping with this mind. And the conditioning of it and the attachment of it to how certain things appear to play out in circumstances, but can actually be expanded to uncover a different way of relating to ourselves in the world. But it also happens to be the case that your mind did open up to different kinds of experiences. So I would like to shift into that and ask you a little bit about this guidance system or the intuition or the guides, and then you know, the specific category of the mediumship, but we can just start at the base level of how this began to unfold for you.
So I have to credit my husband and his family for this beautiful gift that I received, because, you know, I got married and we were in India, and 6 days after my wedding, my father-in-law says to me, let's go to the bedroom, or not let's go to the bedroom, let's go get blessings from the elders. And everyone starts to walk towards my bedroom. And my sister-in-law, who was the only medium in at the time, sits down on the bed, opens up a book, takes a pen, and starts to write stuff. And everybody's sitting around them on the bed, and I'm standing in one corner, and they're like, welcome to your daughter-in-law. Welcome to the family. How are you? And my father-in-law is reading what she's writing. And I am freaking out because I'm like, what the hell is happening? Because all the elders that I know left the house 2 days ago. Everyone's gone. Who is this? And it turned out that she was a medium and she was channeling. And they were talking to their grandfather and other relatives who had passed. And my husband had very conveniently not shared any of this with me because he probably thought I would freak out and never marry him. you know, to this day, he doesn't want to admit it. He says, I did tell you. And I'm like, if you told me something like that, I would have remembered for sure. And so, you know, we just had these weird looks exchanged to each other. And my father-in-law said to him, did you not tell her? And he was like, oh, I'm sure I did. Didn't I? And I'm like, well, I'm sure I would have remembered if you had, you know, so that was the beginning of my introduction to what mediumship looks like. And then we were supposed to go off on our honeymoon and come back to the US. And I forgot all about it. I didn't give it much attention. A year later, I went back, and my mother-in-law, who was kind of like worried that my sister-in-law would move out of the house soon and they would have no one to use as a channeler, started to meditate every day. And about 3 months later, she started to get messages herself. And when we went to visit, she said, why don't we all get up at 4 a.m. and sit and meditate and see what happens? And we were at this point, I know that their family is comfortable with this whole idea of talking to their relatives who have passed. And it's actually a source of comfort. And they recommend that we do it. And we stay connected with the spirit world. And the spirit world loves it when we do pray for them and when we do stay connected to them. So I've heard all of this in the background and I'm familiar, but yet not excited or not dying to figure this out. But when she said that, I was like, okay, curious. I'm like, okay, let's see what happens. And so we get up at 4 a.m. She starts to get some messages. And then a few minutes later, she hands me the book and she goes, okay, you try. And I'm like, oh, well, I don't know how to do this. Like, I don't know. What do you want me to try? And so she goes, just see if you feel anything. Take the pen, take the book and see if you feel anything. And I took the pen and, oh my God, Daniel, I took the pen. I felt this rush of energy go through my hand and I felt my hand start to move. And I could not for the life of me figure out what was going on, because like part of me was scared as hell. Like, what is going on? Is there like a ghost inside my body? Like, what is happening? And part of me was like, oh my God, what is this? Like, what does this mean? So I started to write my name in Hindi, which I don't know how to spell well. I was spelling it all wrong, but I was writing it over and over and over and over. And it was going faster and bigger. The words were getting bigger and faster. As I reached the end of the page, I just freaked out and I gave it to my husband. I was like, I don't know what just happened. That was not me writing. And so that was the first ever experience that I personally had of getting a download.
Well, there's so much to explore there. What I'll say is the way you were invited into it is so interesting. Just spirit bringing you a partner with a family that was already open to mediumship is just really wild. You know, it could, because some people, A lot of people that I talk to who have these gifts will say, oh, from a very young age, I just knew, you know, an angel appeared to me. And I was not that way either. I think I was always spiritually open to the ideas, but I didn't have any conviction. I was more on the other end of the spectrum of having a lot of suffering as a kid. So I wasn't like, I was looking for God and angels. I wasn't finding any, but it was actually through my own mother that started introducing me to that. But you know, in partnership, just like finding that whole world is wild. But the other piece that's interesting, just in hearing the context of your book, is that the way the medium or the vessel through which you started channeling or opening that was through writing. So I feel I already know the answer to this, but do you sense that opening through writing supported you in coming to the page for your book?
I think it allowed me to let it flow for sure, because I was used to allowing that flow to come in through writing, that when it was time for the book, I was able to freely allow it to come through.
Yeah, because I had always been a writer. I struggled a lot in school, but writing was something I could do pretty well. But it was still not, everything still kind of felt like work for me. Like I said, you know, it wasn't, I could produce good stuff. I could be pretty creative. And when I look back in retrospect, it was all kind of a process of channeling, because I would never prepare for writing. I wouldn't outline anything. I would just write. And it tended to, I still don't think I have excellent grammar. It just kind of, but I was able to do well in that area. But it wasn't until I let go of some of the conditions of needing to be good enough and grad school or doing it for grades or whatever. And then, just like you said, all the fears about is this worthy? Is anyone going to want to read this? But my own relationship to channeling or guidance has allowed me to really let it flow, to be an easier process. So I can do it for longer and not get worn out or exhausted or whatever. So I resonate with that idea of just allowing it to flow and getting out of your own head for the process.
Yeah. Because, you know, people ask me, like, what does that mean when you say the book just was downloaded? I think that our guides use our intellect, our abilities to break things down, our ways of receiving messages to give us the flow in a certain way. So, like, if my husband, who is also a medium, downloads a message on a certain topic, it will sound very different than when I download it on a certain topic, on the same topic, right? Like, if we both had the same question that we were asking our guides, we would both receive the answer in a very different way, because his brain works in a different way and my brain works in a different way. And so the way I receive my message is almost the way that I would understand it myself, if that makes sense.
100%. And I feel that has to do with the idea that we all have something to give. So it's going to be uniquely filtered through our brain, our mind. Now, I feel historically there have been channels or channeled writings where people have just said it just came through me, that, you know, I was almost taken over, you know, which is kind of historically how channeling has been perceived, like you almost give your body away to some entity and it just writes through you. And I do sense that is how it has happened in the past, but that now for many of us there's meant to be more of an integration. It's meant to be more personalized. It's meant to be Chitra. It's meant to be Daniel. And it can be a co-creation, because it's all a co-creation. We don't do anything on our own. What is that even supposed to mean? We all came from somewhere. But it's a co-creation, not where I have to give myself over to, you know, Lord Arcturus so it can come through and produce this. I mean, you know, that kind of stuff does happen to me sometimes. But I sense whatever I meant to really put out, It's me. It's the expanded version of me with guidance and support. But really, it's meant to be filtered through that intellect. But for me personally, cleared out of any self-doubt, self-blame, shame, all of that.
Yeah. And I think that when I feel really connected and I feel like I'm really receiving and flowing in the moment is when I don't have the mindset clutter inside, right? When I have a day where I've been triggered mentally and I feel like, oh my God, that fear is just back up again. You know, it's harder to receive. It's harder to receive the flow. But also what you said about co-creation, yes, we are always co-creating. But also the other part of it that I find fascinating is that I'm probably not telling you a lot of new things in the book. It's just how I accumulate that information and share it might be different from someone else who's written a book about mindset, because there are a million books about mindset. I'm not the only one to write it, right? But so there isn't new information. In fact, just the other day, somebody on LinkedIn said they love that I have the three A's in the book, and that's what drew them to my post. And when they read it, they were like, oh, do you know Lois so-and-so? And she talks about the three A's as well. And I'm like, no, I don't. But tell me more. What are her three A's similar? What are they? And she's like, oh, the three A's are from Al-Anon. And they're the same exact three A's that I wrote about. awareness, acceptance, and action. And I was like, holy crap. Like, what? And I had no idea. I've never been, you know, much of an alcohol drinker, let alone know what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. But the fact that somebody there has been talking about the same three A's that were given to me, I don't know. Maybe I channeled somebody who was in Al-Anon. Who knows? I don't know. But again, it's not for me to get caught up in, right? It's not, I could go, oh my God, am I now going to be considered someone who's, you know, plagiarizing or whatever? This is already in existence, the same exact three A's. I could go there. My mind could go there. My conscious mind might even want to explore that. It could be that you are sharing information that has already been shared before. But, and my conscious mind might want to go and explore that more and worry about, you know, oh my God, somebody else used the three A's that I'm putting in my book. And do I have to now worry about copyright and all of that? And instead of letting my mind go there, I just have to remind myself that I am being guided to write this book. I know that I was being guided. And this is what came to me as I was writing the book. And I still stand by the three A's. And if someone else had the same idea, so be it. And I think that if somebody can read these in my book and find some freedom from their mindset, it's worth it. And I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole of like where that happened, how that happened. Because I think at the end of the day, we're all getting intuitive messages. And a lot of them might be similar and not too different. The universal truth is the same.
Of course. I mean, we're all connected. That is the idea. It's coming from the same source ultimately. And that's the beauty of how we get the ego out of the way, of trusting that if I'm being guided or inspired to write something, it doesn't matter how many times it's been written or how many forms. There's that classic story of Eckhart Tolle, you know, the famous author of Power of Now, writing in a coffee shop what was to be the Power of Now. And someone asked him what he was writing, and he told him a bit. And the guy said, oh, you should write something different. There are so many self-help books out there already. And it became probably one of the most famous of all time. So, you know, it just, yeah, it goes to show you. And, you know, that's the interesting thing, particularly in the world of people who are really into quote unquote channeled information, is sometimes people may, or even people who are getting readings or something for the first time, you know, someone could be cynical and say, oh, well, you could say that about anybody. It's like, yeah, but that's the point, though, is that we're not actually that different, you know? But, you know, if you trust and you're open to the alignment of receiving that information, there you can trust there is a reason that you received it, or that the channeled information of one person aligns. I mean, it would be weird if it was totally different, right? It'd be weird if the channeled, if the information was saying totally different things. So there's a cynical way to see it, but there's also a very much in alignment way to understand that that we need to hear things quite a bit of times, it turns out, because that's, you know, and we all hear it when we need to and from the source that we need to.
Yeah. Yeah. You hit upon so many things here, because I'm thinking about, you know, when I do one-on-one readings for people, I channel messages for them. And a lot of times, because I am reading for like, let's say 20 different people, but I find myself saying similar things to everybody, but just tweaked in their own way, in a way that they will receive it better. Right. And I don't know them. A lot of these people that come to me, I don't know them. So I don't know how they're going to receive it. But when it gets channeled and their guides are trying to come through to them and kind of get that message through their head, they will say it in a way that will hit them hard. And the way that I know that the same message hit you differently is that a majority of the time, that's when that person in front of me will get emotional. When I say that same thing to them in a certain way, they get emotional. And that to me is a proof, almost like, okay, that's when the connection happened. That's when the spirit world and the spiritual side of you and the conscious mind of yours just kind of came together and went like, boom, aha. You know, there's something that just clicked in their mind in that moment and they felt it deep down in their soul.
Yeah. And, you know, as someone who also works with people and, you know, who worked with people in a clinical setting and now does it a bit differently, I will say it's really the same process as the writing of, you know, like when I was in the clinical space, there'd be so much emphasis on getting the perfect conceptualization of a person or making the perfect interpretation that explained their life that was so unique to them. And of course, I was all in my head and I was pretty good at that game, but that game's never going to be enough. You could give someone the most complex report of their life and they'll read it and they'll be like, oh yeah, okay, cool, thanks. Anyway, you know, it doesn't mean anything if a person's not ready or willing to receive it. And oftentimes less is more. And when I started letting go of that game and just letting it flow, and sometimes you're questioning it and you're like, I don't know, that came out weird. It seemed too simple or I didn't even really understand. But you get feedback from people who are resonating in different ways, or it resonates a day later or a week later or whatever. It's more about trusting. It's not even about the external validation. It's just trusting that what came through was meant to come through. And I find that in all aspects of my life.
Yeah. And it's beautiful to experience when you let go, you know, because again, we're fighting the conditioning every single day of our lives. We're fighting that conditioning of needing to be perfect, needing to be sure, needing to be, you know, in control. And we have to let all of those layers go and then watch the magic unfold, because life can be magical when you're not trying too hard. It's only when we try too hard is when it gets complicated.
That's the motto for my life. Really, the magic unfolds when I'm not trying too hard. But so for you, because I believe you were prior to that, and I believe you still are a fitness and wellness coach, right? So when you began to open those doors to more channeled messages or intuitive guidance, which in some way may have been similar to the information you were delivering before, but from a very different process. And I'm sure it was also different information at times. How, you know, were there layers of fear similarly that you had to walk through to begin speaking in that way? Or how did that process unfold?
I think you're right in saying that I have always processed information the same way. So when it came to fitness, when it came to nutrition, you know, I think that there's a lot of similarity in the wellness, fitness world and the spiritual world right now, where there are a ton of shiny objects out there. Whether you're trying to eat clean, get, you know, lose weight, get in shape, whatever, there's a bazillion ways to do it, right? And so for the average person,
No one agrees.
It's like religion. You just can't talk about it. But at the same time, all of those, let's take the example of nutrition, right? All the diets out there, I would say a good 75% of them, which are leaving the 25% that are like outrageously crazy, we'll take the 75% that are supposedly commonsensical things to do. Each of those have, let's say, 10 things that they all agree with. They all agree with eating more fruits and vegetables. They all agree with staying more hydrated. They all agree with having more protein in your diet, you know. And then there are some that are like out there, like raw food only.
Yeah,
or,
you know. Only steak all day, every day.
Yeah. So let's leave the extremes out. But if you take the most average common diets out there, they all have, let's say, 8 to 10 basic things in common. My way of looking at it became, and again, it came from my own journey of struggling with weight all my life, right? I was a chubby kid and I struggled with weight all my life. To this day, I'm struggling with it. But what I've realized over time as a nutrition coach is that I need to nourish my body, not punish my body.
It's that parallel of, you know, how we treat other aspects of ourselves, right? Do we nourish ourselves or do we punish ourselves? It's the same.
Yeah, the mind, Yeah, nourish the body, nourish the mind, nourish the soul. That's, I think that's going to be what I'm going to be talking more and more about in my life. I'm starting to see that pattern. But, you know, if you're going to punish your body, you're not going to succeed, for sure, right? For sure. But if you start to nourish it, then you have to understand what nourishes our body, right? And then you go into all of the layers of, okay, what food should I eat? How should they be cooked? How should they be purchased? Where should they be bought from? Should they be organic? Should they not? Like all of that stuff. And I always tried to meet my nutrition clients where they were, as opposed to saying, this is how you're supposed to eat. If you don't eat this way, you're not going to see results. If you eat this way, you will see results. It was more of, okay, where are we struggling? What can we do a little bit better, right? And let's add, let's say there are like these 8 to 10 basic things that everybody should be doing. And it's not just so you can look good on the outside. It's so you can heal your body from the inside. So when you eat well, when you eat clean, when you nourish your body, your hormones will regulate, your blood pressure will normalize, your cholesterol will normalize, your A1C will drop. Like all of those things start to happen and you feel the difference in your body, right? So that's kind of been my approach with fitness as well, where it's like when you're moving your body, we don't all have a lot of time. If we have 30 minutes a day, if we have 45 minutes a day, what can I do to move my body with the most bang for my time, energy, money, all of that? And let's do that. And then I did the same thing with spirituality. What is the bare basic thing that we need to do? First, we need to declutter this mind of ours because that's what's holding us back from everything. Then we try to tap into our intuition. Then we try to go deeper and see what else is out there for us, right? But it has to be a systematic step-by-step process. Otherwise, it's hard to then, because you get so lost in those shiny objects otherwise that it's like you're just bouncing from one to the other without seeing results. And that leads to more frustration.
Yeah. And what I'm feeling as you're speaking is how many parallels there are to what we've been talking about as the spiritual journey, or even just the mind-based journey and the body-based journey. Because just like we were saying before, you can certainly reach a certain level of outward success through self-punishment, like many, many successful CEOs have done. Similarly, you can force the body to look a certain way through self-punishment. I mean, look at it. I, for some reason, I'm really drawn to watching bodybuilder content on YouTube. I kind of feel like I could have been a bodybuilder in another life. And I also have a tendency to be self-punishing at times. But these people, they punish themselves really hard, and they'll talk about how they like it. They like being totally like dead to the world after, you know, a training session. And it's a really brutal lifestyle. They're also, you know, they're treating their bodies, let's just say differently with other kinds of compounds and things like that. So you can get it to look a particular way. It's just that what you realize is that what you really wanted wasn't ever really about just forcefully shaping the physical vessel to look a certain way, just like you were never really after forcibly shaping your circumstances to look a particular way. It was about allowing what you actually came here to do, to allow yourself to feel good.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I've run the gamut of sizes in my body over and over and over, right? I've probably tried every diet in the world. I've lost weight more times than I can count. I've gained it back more times than I can count. And I've come to the realization that, yes, I need to be healthy because this is the only body I have to live in. Yes, all my numbers on the inside need to be in check because that is an indicator of my internal health. But also, it doesn't matter what I look like on the outside, right? And it's been a journey for me to get here because as a personal trainer, I feel the pressure of looking a certain way, right? And having spent a majority of these years as a personal trainer in a gym where I'm surrounded by people like bodybuilders, it is almost like you start to see things from their lens when you're around them all the time, right? And it's like, oh my God, it takes a lot of discipline to be a bodybuilder. And yes, and I started to see my strength when I would do weightlifting, when I would, you know, push boundaries and I would break my personal best records over and over. And it felt good. It felt so good, right? That I wanted to just take it and run with it. But I realized over time, as the weights got heavier and heavier and heavier, that my body was not meant to do this kind of work, right? And after a certain time, my magnesium level started to deplete. You know, I started to see other things happen. And I'm like, why am I, someone who eats really clean, works out an hour and a half a day for 6 days a week, is now struggling with hormone and magnesium and all the mineral issues like that, right? And then it goes to the emotional part of it, which I hadn't even started uncovering, right? Because there was emotional reasons why my body was gaining weight and I had to heal that. So I went into all of that, the spiritual, the emotional, I kind of worked on all of that, right? And as I started to uncover those things, it got to a point where it was like, okay, I'm going to stop worrying about what my body looks like. And I'm going to start focusing on keeping it healthy, keeping it happy, and keeping it in a state of somewhat balanced, you know, way of moving it and feeding it and all of that, as opposed to an extreme way of like, I have to go to the gym. If I don't go to the gym one day, I am, you know, failing. And that pressure that was coming from that. So now I'm like, I'm gonna do my weightlifting 3 to 4 days a week, maybe three even. And then I'm going to include some dance. I'm going to include some yoga, because that to me is a way that I can bring joy to my body without punishing it.
Well, and I love that. And I love that about you, because, yeah, you do look around. You look at fitness, a lot of fitness coaches, a lot of people in wellness who look a particular way. And it does seem to set a standard, even if they may be conveying a message that says, no, you don't have to do it like celebrities and everything. Meanwhile, they look exactly like celebrities. It's a little challenging. And this is not to be dismissive of them, because that may be a line for them. But to say that those are the only people who have something to give, this goes back to when we're writing or we're channeling our gifts, right? It doesn't matter how many people are out there. We all exist at different places on the spectrum. And for that very reason, we have something to give. You have something to give that someone else, you know, absolutely doesn't. And that's the diversity of fitness, the diversity of spirituality, of the whole path of self-improvement or betterment. And I resonate so much with what you say, because I have a pretty strong will and I've always been able to push myself pretty hard physically. So there was a point where I was doing like this P90X program and I was lifting really heavy and I was very big looking. And I was deeply sick and my nervous system had so much trauma unprocessed. I was not doing any peeling or any feeling or any healing in that way. But because there is some merit to being able to push yourself, like you said, and it feels good, but it was the only tool I had in my toolkit. So I was pushing myself, dragging myself out of bed, pushing myself through these intense workouts. I was very big, but I wasn't very healthy until, you know, it got to the point, particularly when you have, you know, a more masculine identity and there are some things that are encouraged to really push through it, that it was really through softening and developing other tools, softening not just to my body, softening to my mind, softening to, you know, all the things that were playing out in my circumstances, that it's only then that I started to heal. And now, you know, I still like to do strength training and stuff, but it's a very colorful, dynamic array of things that I do. I rest so much, like an obscene amount. If people would see how much time I actually spend laying on the couch, it's crazy. But they'll look at my body and I look good because I have a way of navigating it. Like I can do strength training and then I can be on the couch and whatever. And there'll be periods where I can't do a single thing. And pretty much, I was just telling you about this period I went through after some more pranic healing where pretty much all I could do is take baths every day. And it challenges my ego. I don't particularly love being in that state, but I honor it. Whereas in the past, I would really resist it. And so it's like anything, you know, moderation for pushing yourself, right? Like if it's only just do it, if it's only just, you know, push through it and grind out, like, you know, it doesn't matter if you have 1% body fat, there's probably going to be other things in this life that you're being guided to learn.
I think it's a mix, right? I think it's a mix of moderation and knowledge put together, right? So as we learn more, as we know more, we, you know, Maya Angelou would always say, right? When you know better, you do better. So when I didn't know better, I was doing crazy diets to lose weight. When I knew a little bit better, I started to eat clean with a lot of restrictions. And when I started to know even more and really hone into my own energy and my own spirit, I was able to do what works best for me.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that's also an evolution where, you know, you listen to what's around you and you're being given a certain amount of wisdom and you respond to that. And then as you dig deeper, you get a little more. And then as you get deeper, you get a little more. And the deeper we go, the more authentic and individualized that wisdom becomes for us.
And that's really where, for me, the intuitive wisdom comes in, because as you open to that guidance, you can trust in the individualized. For me, it was even in the beginning, as I was exploring things like muscle testing and just how to find supplements that work for you. Like, yeah, I'd worked with functional medical doctors and I had all my blood work done. But personally, for me, it was through the intuitive cord and this is not for everyone, but I do everything intuitively. Everything I put into my body is intuitive. And maybe that's not, you know, some people, you know, like you've said, maybe you'll ask a lot of different people and you can gather information that way. For me, what I learned is that I really could listen in to supplements, to everything. And that, and I actually don't have a very moderate personality. I never did, whether it came to substance use or other kinds of things. I know very well what Al-Anon is. So, you know, I'm familiar with all ends of the spectrum. And for me, again, like, moderation is an interesting word, because it's not, for me, like, actually, when I started to change, I was still doing some pretty extreme things. I was doing some extreme surrender, some extreme resting, because that's just my personality, like some extreme fasting, which some people, I lost a lot of weight. And even my parents were like, oh, this is looking weird. But like, hey, that was my trauma healing route. And I don't say it has to be for everyone, but it got me, things evened out and it got me to where I needed to be. So I feel the integration of 21st century medicine is understanding things like energetics and what I would say intuition. If an intuitively minded person worked in every health food store, supplementation shop, or, you know, you could really, of course, do the lab work and whatever, but like, that guidance for me has been very important.
It would be so nice, wouldn't it, if like the doctor's office worked with the intuitive people and the psychologists and the therapists and all of them came together to heal you. It would be magical. But hopefully
it's coming. I'm creating it. I'm creating that. I'm manifesting that.
You are.
That's coming. It's all happening. But yes, I have, because yeah, even when you're in those worlds, you don't necessarily know what your body needs. And a lot of it comes from experimentation and different ways of getting that feedback and checking in. But yeah, that's the idea.
For sure.
So one last area we'll go into before we wrap up is, and you know, this probably wouldn't have come to my conscious mind, but I always create a framework based on, you know, some higher guidance. And I was just being guided to ask you about family, and maybe that's because it's on my own mind, but particularly as the you know, as the mediumship and the intuition and all of that opens, like, how does that impact, influence, or change in any way how you show up with your family, like with your partner, with your kids? Like, does that intuitive core, does that guidance system show up in a certain way with family? Does it sometimes contradict what the, you know, the mother wants to do or something? I'm just curious about that.
Yeah. It does show up, because like I said earlier, with me, what you see is what you get. And so I can't not share this part of my life. I can't not share that everything I do has to be intuitively guided, because I see how much more beautiful my life has been ever since I allowed that to happen. But, you know, I have to be careful, especially because I have two boys who are in their teens now. I have a 19 and a 16-year-old. So I can't push them into this journey. I have to respect where they are. And at the same time, I don't want to miss out on this amazing gift that I get to experience. So it's, you know, it's a constant like balancing act of like telling them. So what I try to do personally, you know, and I've realized over time, and I think having worked with like people who are in the world of therapy or like a parenting coach that I worked with, It's almost like I had to realize that these kids are not mine to mold into what I think makes a good human being. They are mine to nurture and take care of and, you know, allow their individuality to come through as much as possible. So I share my experiences with them every day. I tell them, especially now that I'm out in the open as an intuitive and a medium, which I hid from the world for 20 years. Now that I'm out there, I have many more experiences that I can share with them. And I will tell them this. And, you know, my one kid, I won't say which, but one of them is more open to it than the other. He will always tell me, like, can you intuition this for me? Like, if there's a decision he needs to make, can you check with your intuition and tell me? And I'm like, I can, but I don't want it to be my decision. So why don't you try to tap into your intuition and see what you're getting? He's like, I don't know. And then sometimes he's like, I feel like I'm getting a yes, but I don't know. Get up. So I'm like, that's okay. It's okay. Let's explore it. Let's play with it. Let's have fun with it. And so I try to make it light. I try to make it fun. I try to remind them that they have something inside of them that can connect to that guidance directly. And so just try, just keep trying and be open to it.
Yeah. And I see why I was guided to ask about that because there's so much parallel, right? We're talking about, you know, treating our mind and our body and our circumstances with love and not just trying to mold them into some image of success. And kids are like the perfect microcosm and representation of allowing it to be so. And yet for those of us in the healing arts, you know, they're not, you know, those professions and those life paths are not immune from ego or just the idea that like, well, this has worked for me. So like, maybe you should consider it. And I look forward to navigating that myself at some point, but also I see it reflected in my own parents and the degree that me and my brothers explore different life paths. And even to the degree that like, my mother, for example, is open to this world and actually introduced to it to me. And yet I went in a direction that was triggering for her. So it's like, yeah, I think every child is on the journey of getting free of conditions and expectations. And every parent is probably on the journey of allowing it to be so and trusting that you called these souls into being to love them and let them be their fullest light.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think that as far as even like taking it back to generational differences, right? Like I didn't have that kind of upbringing where, you know, my individuality was focused on at all. I was forced into mold after mold after mold after mold. So I am that much more compassionate towards my kids because I moved to this country. I have the freedom to do what I want with them, to allow them to be who they are fully and express themselves, right? Am I trying to mold them unknowingly in certain ways? I'm sure, because I still have my own biases and I'm sure they'll be able to tell a whole different story in their therapy sessions. But, but you know, the fact that I'm aware, the fact that I'm trying, the fact that I'm evolving, I think, and that's, to me, that's what it comes down to, right? Everybody has conditioning that they're trying to fight, and everybody has goals that they need to get to. But if we just make the effort to be curious with ourselves, our minds, our bodies, our spirit, and see what it is that we want more of, and tap into that and focus on that, it will lead us to some sort of evolution in our journey.
Yeah.
It's when we get into modes of denial or, you know, get so caught up in the conditioning that we become the conditioning is when, you know, it becomes harder to break free.
100%. And specifically with the intuitive development, you know, I've noticed the challenges for me and that, you know, that the ego needs a lot of humbling. And I'm speaking for myself personally, because particularly when you're in a position of power, if you are a clinician or if you are a parent, and I can see myself playing that role and being like, well, I do know actually what you need to do. But it's interesting. The way it has played out for me is with my family of origin. Like, you know, I do have, well, really just my mother, the rest of my family couldn't really care less. I mean, they care a little bit, but not in the same way. Will ask me, you know, questions and ask me about my intuition, but it didn't. But that takes integrity, right? Because in the beginning, I really wanted to prove that I did have this capacity, that I did have this gift. And every time I tried to use it out of that sense of proving, it would go very poorly. And there was a lot of messiness in the process because, you know, when you are a family that is sensitive to ego, anyone who claims to sort of know things, which is popular dynamic in my particular family structure, you know, it's interesting. It can create drama. So for me, letting go of that and just pursuing my own highest light allowed the people in my life who really could benefit from my guidance to come to me and for me to stay rooted in my own integrity. If, like you said, it's like, this is not for me to say, and actually there is nothing coming to me about this, or I'm not meant to know this. And I can see that playing out with, you know, in the family of my own creation someday. So, well, this has been amazing, Chitra. And I know you will have to pick up your son shortly from school. So we will wrap this up or begin to wrap this up. The last thing I'll just open up is if there's anything else you'd like to add or speak to or feel guided to share.
I think we've covered so much, right? And I love the parallels that we have in each other's lives. And I get to see that in you and feel validated in my own way. So it's been a beautiful conversation. The only thing I would add is, you know, just for people to look at where the suffering is, right? And I think that our suffering, our challenges, our problems are here to teach us something and are here to help us evolve. So instead of looking at those problems and diving deeper into things like fear and worry and insecurity and doubt and, you know, scarcity, let's look at it as like, okay, what is it here to teach me? Let's explore. Let's be curious. Let's just go down that rabbit hole with like Alice in Wonderland and see what that Wonderland is all about, because you might be surprised at what you find and you might be surprised at how much of your own power you can then see. So that would be the invitation that I would leave with people.
Beautiful. Yeah. Let it be a medicine. I say it quite often. Let it be a medicine. So it's a sour tasting medicine a lot of the time, but it's a medicine all the same. Beautiful. And, where can people find you or purchase the book if you'd like them to?
I would love them to if they feel called to. The book is on Amazon. It's called The Warrior Mindset. And my website is fitwarriorlife.com. And everything is on there. It's pretty comprehensive. I talk about all the ways that I work with people there. I offer everyone a discovery call to connect with me. And if they just want to talk about stuff, explore, you know, something that's coming up for them, just to have that conversation in a safe space with somebody who will, you know, just hold that space for them. That invitation is out there as well. It's on the website.
Beautiful. And I will put all this in the show notes so people can find it. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this, Chitra. I do this because I just really like to connect with people and I like to feel connected. So thank you for allowing that to unfold. And I'm sure I will talk to you soon.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor.
Thanks for listening. If you like the episode and would like to support the podcast, please subscribe and leave a review anywhere you listen. And if you'd like to connect further, feel free to reach out on Instagram, my website, or my Patreon page at patreon.com/DrDanielAtkins, where for $5 a month, you can gain access to all sorts of exclusive benefits and offerings for the Be the Vessel community. This includes live channeled events, a new healing series podcast, and more. Until then, may you be the light, the frequency, and the vessel for your highest vision.